The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 108. Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to bring someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that I have really been looking forward to speaking to. We've been going back and forth and back and forth with all my crazy travels, but he's someone that all of you guys are really, really going to love because he is in the gold business and the storage business and all those questions that I know everyone has. So, Mark Yaxley, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
It's good to be here, George. Thanks for having me.
Okay, now I've got a laundry list of questions, but the first thing that people always ask me is, George, if I'm worried about confiscation, and they know history going back to the 1930s, they're Americans, let's say they've got a substantial amount of gold or silver, just something they don't feel comfortable burying in their backyard. Mm-hmm. What do they do? What's the game plan there?
Well, listen, I always start by answering this question, which is a question that our audience and our clients ask quite often as well, by saying, look, if the American government really wanted to confiscate assets and was in a position where they were so desperate for money that they were going to start, you know, taking from the people, I think that the low-hanging fruit really isn't gold or silver. Gold or silver doesn't necessarily represent as much of the world's wealth or global economy as it once did. It's not as significant an asset class as it was 100 years ago. So if they were really desperate for money, I think they'd be going after things like pension funds, IRA accounts. This is digital. Basically, these are digital assets for the most part. They know exactly how much people have. They know where they can get it versus kicking down physical doors to, you know, to take people's gold and silver away, whether that be domestically in the U.S. or offshore. So, you know, in my most honest of answers, George, is I think it's a pretty unlikely scenario. But okay, if you are concerned about it and you're losing sleep over it, that's exactly why companies like ours are in business, or one of the reasons we're in business, is to give people peace of mind. And so you can always store your gold or silver offshore, whether it be, you know, in Grand Cayman, whether it be in Zurich or Singapore or places like that, if you want to get it outside of the U.S.
Yeah. So if you're someone that had a substantial amount and you want to kind of diversify your political risk, maybe you don't want everything in Cayman, maybe you don't want everything in Singapore, maybe another one of these jurisdictions, what's the best angle? How do you do that? And then what are the pros and cons with each jurisdiction or each main jurisdiction, or are they very homogenous?
No, there's definitely, you know, some variance between jurisdictions. For the longest time, speaking for American investors mostly, you know, they ended up in Zurich. That, like, the Swiss, you know, recipe or the Swiss solution was kind of where everybody ended up. It was a very limited choice. And then in the mid-2000s, the Swiss started turning over information to the U.S. government. It had more to do with the banking, with bank accounts there, but it affected the precious metal storage industry as well. So then Singapore popped up. So now you've got a variety. You can go anywhere from Grand Cayman down to New Zealand and everywhere in between. There's all these jurisdictions. So, you know, the first thing is, at the forefront of that decision, is you want to do a lot of research about the different jurisdictions, because they all have different laws and they all have different views on private property. You know, some jurisdictions, for example, Grand Cayman or the Cayman Islands and Singapore, were based on British common law, versus you might have some countries in Europe that have a different background for the laws and the way they were written. And those, there are specific laws about wealth confiscation and the government's title to people's assets in times of crisis. So you probably want to start by doing your research there and really drilling down on two or three jurisdictions that are most appealing to you. Secondary things that you want to consider are, how far is it from me? You know, can I get there if I have to? For example, like you just were telling me offline before, you were trying to travel, you know, to get to where you are today, and it was really difficult. Now, that might not normally be the case, but in times of crisis, all of a sudden it is a real thing, and you have to think about that. Can I get to Singapore? Can I get to New Zealand from Miami if I had to, or from New York City? So you definitely want to think about how far a place is from you. You're going to want to think about things like language. I know it sounds a little bit silly, but when you're doing business with people in other countries, other time zones, that adds complexity sometimes to the transaction. It can slow things down. You have to send more emails. You know, you're not awake at the same time to make a phone call. So, you know, there's a variety of different things to consider, but I wouldn't recommend you kind of overextend yourself and say, oh, I'm going to diversify into like 10 jurisdictions. Right. Because chances are, if you do that, you're going to have multiple relationships with multiple vault, you know, operators or vendors on the go. You're going to run into some of the issues that I was talking about. You might run into issues which are very real, like liquidity. For example, if you've got assets in a place like Panama, let's say, a lot of Americans, you know, still use Panama as a place to have a safe deposit box and to store their gold and silver. Let's say it's in a private bank in Panama, which, okay, it might be a pretty secure place, but you have no liquidity. You can't sell your gold or silver to that private bank necessarily in Panama. So you want to make sure.
Right.
Yeah, you want to make sure that one of the things that you're checking on your list is that the jurisdiction you're in has liquidity as well. So there's really a laundry list of things to consider. But I think the jurisdiction is really at the forefront of that question.
So which jurisdictions have the best private property rights? And then which jurisdictions have the best liquidity?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the ones I end up recommending most often to our clients are the Cayman Islands, obviously where our business is. It's a country that's really, its lifeblood is wealth management and all the services that are part of the financial system and part of the financial services industry. So the government there understands that if they were to do something silly like confiscate, whether it be from, you know, whether it be people's gold or whether it be, you know, from people's bank accounts, they know that they'd be ruining their global reputation as a country where businesses go to look for these types of services. Right. So basically they'd be shooting themselves in the foot. So Cayman is really a country that exists almost solely for that reason and because they have nice beaches. Mm-hmm. So that's one good place. Another good place is Liechtenstein, which is a very small country that's nestled between Germany, Switzerland, and Austria. So it's a tiny little place. It's got about 40,000 residents. It's got the second highest net worth per capita in the world. And it's a place that still has a royal family. And the royal family has written laws there that basically state that they have no right to people's personal property in times of crisis. So they cannot bail in times of crisis. So Liechtenstein is another very interesting option, especially if you have business in Europe or you happen to be someone who lives in Europe or has access to go there or needs to go there on a regular basis. And then I think Singapore has to be considered. It's also very similar laws to Grand Cayman. So privacy is very high on the list in terms of non-disclosure of assets of certain categories like gold and silver, for example. That's not being disclosed to the local government. It's not being disclosed to the local tax authorities. And there's a lot of liquidity in Singapore. It's a major hub for trading. So anytime you want to buy and sell precious metals, you can get in and out very easily.
Yeah. Is there substantial liquidity in Cayman and Liechtenstein as well?
Yeah, I mean, Liechtenstein being situated so close to the German market. So the German gold market, a lot of people think when they think of the gold markets, they think of China and India, because those two cultures have a very high affinity for gold. But if you if you think about the history in Germany, because of the two wars in the last 100 years, their affinity for gold is extremely high. And per capita, Germans own the most gold and silver bullion. So very liquid markets in Frankfurt, in Munich, there's some very large dealers there. And then, of course, you have the Swiss on the other side of Liechtenstein. So trading is a non-issue in Liechtenstein. Grand Cayman historically is not a very liquid jurisdiction. But when SWP set up shop, the first thing we did is we went and partnered with U.S. wholesalers. So we brought some of the big players from the U.S. market, from Texas and New York. We invited them into the vault and we said, why don't you guys make a market down here? And we'll take care of all the marketing of our program and getting the clients in here. And you guys can run the market. You can do the wholesale buying, the wholesale selling. So we were able to bring kind of the same liquidity that you'd find in a major market to a very niche offshore jurisdiction.
Yeah, I should have asked that question right off the bat, Mark. So can we circle back just briefly? And if you could give us the Reader's Digest version of what you do and what your company does so people can get some context to what we're saying.
Sure. SWP really does three things. We trade precious metals at a retail level. So we're selling to retail investors and we're buying back from retail investors. We act as the two-way market maker for the retail investor. Behind us, you have those American wholesalers that give us the liquidity that we need to be able to facilitate the buying and selling of physical precious metals. So everything we do is literally physical bars and coins that are shipped to the Cayman Islands, and they sit in our vault. So the second activity that we have is segregated allocated storage. Mm-hmm. So when people buy, you know, 10 ounces of gold, they actually get a 10-ounce gold bar or 10 1-ounce bars from the Royal Canadian Mint, from Pamp Suisse. And those bars physically sit in a box that's allocated to them. It's their personal property sitting in the vault. And then the third thing that we do is a little bit like what you do, is we create educational videos to inform people how to buy precious metals. How does this whole world work? Because it seems like everyone I meet that's not already a precious metal investor seems to be confused. They're like, I don't want to get gold. Do I buy mining stocks? Do I have to talk to my banker? Like, they think it's really complicated and they think it's for wealthy people. And both those things are not true. It's actually really straightforward, and you don't have to be rich to buy gold or silver.
One question that I personally have, and I haven't been able to find the answer to, I read a lot of things online, but I read one expert saying one thing and another expert saying the other. And that's with taxation for American citizens with gold coins. And what I've gathered, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that everyone says, oh, they're not taxed because there isn't any disclosure law. But it seems like there's no disclosure law for the dealer, but that doesn't mean that you don't have to report it on your 1040 or whatever your personal tax form is. So how does that work? Let's set the record straight right now.
So I'll start by saying this. You should speak to a tax professional. I'm not a tax professional. I didn't even grow up in the United States. So I grew up in Canada, but we do deal with a lot of American clients. So this question comes up quite often, and I'll share with you what I know to be fact. The dealer reporting is really on a state-by-state level. Some states have laws in place that make so that the dealers operating businesses in those states have to report either at a certain threshold or all transactions to the state government.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily mean that the taxpayer has to do any reporting. It only means that the dealer has to do reporting. As far as I'm aware, precious metals held directly are not necessarily a reportable asset, but if you do realize a capital gain or a capital loss, you have to report that capital gain, or you should report that capital loss on your personal income tax.
That's what I thought.
Okay,
even if it's an American gold coin.
As far as I'm aware, regardless of the product, as long as it's bullion and as long as you have realized a capital gain, you are supposed to report that income, which would then be taxable. At which level it's taxable, I don't know. I can also tell you that precious metals held directly offshore. So this is a big question for a lot of our investors. They say, if I store precious metals with you, do I have to report it? You can go to the IRS's website, and it says clearly that precious metals held directly are non-reportable to the IRS. But again, if you realize a capital gain, you are supposed to report that capital gain. So there's no getting around the capital gains. Bottom line is, you should be paying income tax on capital gains on precious metals, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, if you're an American, I think making it even more confusing, in Europe, there are certain countries where if you buy a coin, if it's considered money, then it's not taxable, and it gets very, very confusing. But we'll just stick with it from an American viewpoint. Why that's important is because so many people think that if gold goes to 10,000 an ounce or 20,000, and I'm the biggest gold bull that's out there, and I suggest everyone own gold. And people who watch my videos understand that I is automatically 10% allocation to gold. But if it goes up to, let's say, 10,000, that doesn't necessarily mean that you get rich, because if it just goes up in nominal terms with inflation, and then you go ahead and sell, then you've still got a substantial capital gain. And if it only went up with inflation, you could see this situation where you would actually lose purchasing power if you were to sell, with gold going up to, you know, whatever, 50,000 an ounce. It really doesn't matter. So, and again, I'm an advocate of gold. I think everyone should own it, but I want to make sure that people, if they do own it, they understand exactly what the benefits are and maybe what some of the benefits aren't.
Sure. What some of the benefits aren't. Yeah. If you owned gold between 2012 and 2019, you probably would have been scratching your head a little bit and saying to myself, you know, I could be in the stock market making healthier returns than I am in precious metals. Same was true for silver. A lot of silver bugs out there were really disappointed until like the last 3 or 4 weeks, in fact. So if you look at precious metals and you compare, you try to compare it to other assets that either pay you dividends or pay you interest, a lot of the time you're going to be disappointed. The key is not to look at precious metals like traditional or like those other asset classes. It really is a standout, and it performs at its very best during times exactly like this. These crises is why you buy precious metals. When we always tell our clients, buy it pre-crisis. So get your 10% pre-crisis while the prices are relatively low, while premiums are relatively low. Because once everybody starts piling into the market, like we're seeing right now, where volumes have gone up about 300% in the last 3 to 4 months, and it's not a spike. That's an ongoing trend right now in the precious metals industry, which will probably continue. Thing is, you're now paying almost $1,900 an ounce when you factor in your premiums for those physical products, and your premiums are higher than they'd usually be as well. So one of the downsides, like you said, of precious metals is sometimes you just got to kind of eat it and wait for it to do its job. And right now it's doing its job very, very well. And it'll probably continue doing its job very, very well throughout, if this crisis remains kind of throughout an extended period.
Yeah. And I want to be very clear with that line of questioning. What I was getting at, and this is for the viewer, is that I hear a lot of people that are under the assumption that gold capital gains are tax-free. And that's an advantage. And that was my point, that be careful with that one, because most likely those capital gains are not tax-free, even if it's on a gold coin. So I just want to be clear with the audience there. So we talked about physical. Now, I'd love to get your opinion on the ETFs, the funds. And the way I see it, gold for me is just insurance. It's not really an investment. It's not a speculation. I think the gold miners are a speculation. I think silver is more of a speculation. We'll get into that in a moment. But if it's just insurance, then I like to have the physical because I'm buying it for a different reason. But let's say that right now we're in COVID. I cannot buy the physical. It's very difficult because of what I've been doing. So I've just been looking at just an ETF as kind of a placeholder. So you get like the GLD, or you look at Rick Rule's product with Sprott, the PHYS. What do you think of those? What are some potential downsides and what are the upsides to owning? And then maybe if you could compare and contrast those two, if you know anything about them.
Sure. I think there's definitely a place in the market for ETFs. Obviously, they've done extremely well. So, you know, there are a number of different ways that you can own precious metals, from buying your physical bars and coins, which is kind of the most old school conservative way of doing it, where it's your own personal property. Nobody has title to it. There's no confusion. There's no chance of, you know, a fund going under or a fund being mismanaged or anything like that. And those things do happen. It happened to me recently when I bought into an oil fund. So I learned firsthand that funds can be mismanaged. But there's definitely a place, and in my mind, the role of an ETF is for shorter term positions. So if you have a short term horizon or window where you want to speculate or earn a profit quickly on trading precious metals, gold or silver, maybe platinum, palladium or rhodium, then you can find an ETF. You can get in and out at a relatively low cost. It's easy to transact. It's, you know, it's obviously in real time. There are no premiums fluctuating, you know. So I think in my mind, that's the position for ETFs, is kind of that shorter time horizon and a lower cost to transact.
So more of a trade instead of just a long-term insurance policy.
Exactly. Now, to contrast different funds, to be honest, I don't spend my time analyzing them. So I don't want to talk badly or best of one of those two options. But I also use ETFs as well. I also use precious metal funds that contain mining stocks that are picked for me. I think picking your own mining stocks is really risky business. From the guys I know in the industry, they said like 9 out of 10 is a dog. And if you hit the winner, well, you're off to the races. It's great. So you want to be very, very careful about picking mining stocks. It's very, very risky. But again, if you pick the right stocks or you have a good advisor, you can do extremely well. Mining stocks have outperformed physical gold this year about 2 to 1. So a lot of upside there. So There's roles for all of these different products. They come in all kinds of different packaging, but the most important message for clients is understand exactly what you're investing in and do know about the downside. Because for example, with ETFs, there are some ETFs that will allow you to convert into physical metal for delivery, but you're going to pay very significant premiums and delivery costs to take possession of those physical metals. And then there are others that will not allow you to convert into physical. So that option doesn't even exist. And the other thing I'd say about ETFs is really understanding the fees that are being charged, because a lot of people seem to think the guys that run ETFs do it for free. They don't. They've got some of these, you know, they might have a management fee of 1%, 2% built into the ETF. And if you look at that versus annual storage for a fully allocated, fully segregated account, those are usually in the range of about 0.5% to 0.75%. So very comparable at the end of the day when you factor in all of the costs for an ETF versus buying it and storing it somewhere.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
What are some of the pitfalls in buying physical gold or maybe storage that people should look out for? Like if someone's new to buying gold or coins, I'm sure the first thing is they just don't want to get scammed. So what are some of the things they should look out for? Maybe some red flags, and what type of due diligence should they do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a great question. And it's really kind of the fundamental first things that people should be thinking about. First things first, we always say is buy from a reputable source, you know, and that might mean paying a little bit more, because if you go out on the internet, it's such, you know, you can go to eBay, you can go to Alibaba, you can end up buying fakes on either one of those websites, for example. So you want to deal with a company that's been in business for some time. You want to do your due diligence, maybe on their employees or their owners, to make sure that these guys are legitimate and that the product that you're receiving is going to be coming directly from mints or refineries that those companies work with, they have trading lines with, so they have access to that metal. Aside from doing your due diligence on the products, I think spending a little bit of time educating yourself about spreads when it comes to physical metals, because a lot of people read newsletters and they base their investment decisions from newsletters or podcasts like this one. So it's important to know that the information they're getting is really legit. And an example that I see quite often is people say, I should only buy coins because coins are worth more. And when I sell them, I'm always going to get more, and they're more liquid than bars. And it's one of those things that bothers me, because I'm in the business. I'm like, that's just misinformation. You can do very, very well for yourself by buying physical bullion bars. You'll save some money on your premiums, and they are equally as liquid as coins, so long as you're holding them in a marketplace that has good liquidity. Right. If you're in a small town somewhere in, you know, the Midwest, and you have one local coin shop that trades 5 or 10 ounces of gold a week, well, you know, walking in there with your kilo gold bar, that might not be the best fit for you. You might not get a very good bid. But if you have a kilo gold bar in, you know, one of our vaults or in any of the major players' storage programs, or even at home and you're shipping it to them, they'll gladly bid on your kilo gold bar all day long, and you'll get a competitive bid. So it's just important that people take the time, watch some videos, listen to some people, and understand, you know, kind of the whole picture, and not just go into it and do the first thing that someone told them to do, or because they read it in a newsletter. But once you have that basic education, it's actually one of the simplest investments you'll ever make in your life, to be honest.
What type of premiums should people expect, and how much do they fluctuate, and why would they fluctuate up or down?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think you have to kind of break gold and silver you have to look at them individually in this case, because premiums for gold tend to be a lot lower than silver to begin with. Like if you look at today, which we're in a crisis, so premiums are already higher. So to answer the second part of your question, one of the things that really affects product premiums is obviously market demand. The mints and refineries, picture these companies as big factories. They have a certain amount of output per week, per month, and they have their distributors on set allocations. So when the demand in metals like now surges 200, 300%, these mints are caught off guard. They're like, oh my God, we have to hire more staff. We have to train these guys. We have to buy new equipment, which has to ship in from China, from Germany, wherever the printing, the minting presses are being manufactured, and they have to ramp up production. In the meantime, the available inventory in the market of physical metals gets really, really tight. And then you start to see premiums creeping up, which is exactly what's happening right now. So anyways, to answer the first part of the question, gold premiums right now, if you were to buy a 1 ounce gold coin, you'd probably pay retail somewhere around 4 to 5%, somewhere in that ballpark. Where if you contrast that to 1 ounce of silver, you'd probably be paying about 10% and upwards. So when you start, if you're really price sensitive and you're someone who really crunches the numbers, you try to save as much as you can at every turn with your investments, you're probably going to lean towards gold for that reason, or at least maybe a larger percentage of your precious metals portfolio for into gold versus silver. Silver, like you said earlier, I think you nailed it on the head. You said silver is more of an investment. It's for me, it's even though you're paying a higher premium, you can see more volatility in the silver price, and you could realize a shorter term gain in silver than you'll see in gold, which is really your long-term hedge. It's your wealth insurance. It's a cornerstone in your portfolio. I mean, aside from demand, the different things that might impact the premium is the brand of the product that you're purchasing. So for example, if you're purchasing 1 ounce gold or silver Eagles from the US Mint, they're the world's number one selling product. They're in high demand. You're always going to pay a higher premium because they're more expensive coming out of the mint doors versus other competing products. On the other end of that scale, you've got private mints, private refineries. These places operate at a lower overhead, and they'll push out 1 ounce rounds, you know, for 2 or 3% less than what the Eagles will cost you. So the brand and demand are really the two things that are going to kind of drive that premium. And obviously when the market cools off, you're going to start to see premiums fall. You're also going to see buyback prices from dealers fall as well, kind of in tangent as the market cools off and dealers, you know, are then sitting on inventory during those kind of quiet periods. Whereas today, you know, dealers can't get their hands on enough product to sell.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of my next question is the reason that the spread is so high on silver is because the supply demand imbalance is more extreme than gold right now.
Definitely. Yeah. Silver is a really small market. I don't think people realize just how, like, precious metals in general is a small market, and silver is much, much smaller than gold. Not because there's not globally a lot of production. The supply for silver is very steady, in fact, but the demand went from, you know, like I said earlier, you know, 0 miles an hour to 60 within a very, very short period of time. And the mints and the producers need time to catch up to that production to get their products into the marketplace. And they're slowed down by things like COVID, you know, the inability to ship into markets and deliver into markets. For example, in Grand Cayman, we can't get the silver on commercial flights right now to bring it into Cayman because the commercial flights aren't flying as regularly. So all of these things make it so it's harder for investors to get their hands on physical product. We've seen strange things like the premiums on 100-ounce silver bars, which are usually one of the cheapest ways for investors to invest in silver. That premium's actually risen dramatically to a point where it's more expensive to buy a 100-ounce silver bar premium-wise than it is a 1 ounce round right now, because there's just such a demand and a back order of these 100-ounce bar formats. So yeah, to answer your question, it all boils down to extreme mainstream physical demand.
You touched on it briefly there, Mark. What is the type of supply shock that we're seeing with these gold and silver producers? And has it gotten any better since March or since the main thrust of COVID? Are we seeing like a second wave, not only with cases, but also with supply shock? Or are they Have they added the additional capacity that they needed to handle the demand, or how does that work now?
Yeah, it's definitely starting to look a lot better. I'll tell you, it was, I've been telling people it was the best of times, worst of times before in March, April, early May, because the revenue and the bottom line for precious metals dealers was fantastic. But the worst of times was they couldn't get the physical delivery of the product. You had mints and mines that were both shut down because of Corona, like the Royal Canadian Mint, which is one of the largest producers in the world, shut down for a month. Even I think it was 6 weeks. So no Maple Leafs on the market, no gold bars, no silver bars from the Royal Canadian Mint. They've now reopened. Everyone is producing again. So they're catching up. That flood of product onto the market is now flowing through their distributors. So it is improving. I'd say it went from delivery times of about 6 to 8 weeks. It's down to about 2 to 3 weeks now. So it's definitely a better situation. But the second wave, it also is the summertime. So people are backing off a little bit. They're doing other things with their time other than investing. But if we do see a major second wave for COVID or a pullback in the equities market, which I'm expecting personally, I think we'll be right back to 6 to 8 weeks delivery in no time.
How do you personally look at gold? And then how do you look at silver? And is there a difference there? Are they kind of the same? Or, and then what do you kind of advise clients?
I look at gold as very much a long-term investment. It's wealth insurance from my family. So I buy gold once a month, you know, basically payday or the day after payday. Yeah. I allocate a certain amount. I'm a little bit longer than 10%. I'm more in the 20 to 25 range, but I'm also a little bit biased because I work with it every day. So I'm not price sensitive unless I think it's time to sell. And I think one mistake that precious metal investors often make is they don't let go of their precious metals. There is a time to load up. And that time in this market was 2013 to 2019. You had a lot of time to buy cheap gold. And there will be a time probably in 2 to 3 years from now to sell and take profits and reinvest that money into asset classes that are undervalued. But for the meantime, I'm still buying on a regular basis. So I have the same approach as you do.
I was going to ask you, how do you personally determine if it's time to sell?
Well, there's a number of factors. I mean, I have some price targets in mind. I would probably be a seller of gold depending on where we are, when this occurs, and you can always reevaluate the markets, but I'd probably be a seller of gold anywhere between $2,200 to $2,500. That means I will have, I bought a lot at $1,200, $1,300. So I will have made, a very decent gain, and I'm happy to take some of that money and reinvest it into cheaper assets. I think that sometimes the mistake that investors make is they tend to read newsletters where people say, and a lot of famous people say this, and I'm not criticizing those people, they're entitled to their views, but they say gold's going to $10,000. Okay, so let's say that didn't happen. And let's say you bought gold today and you held gold through 2,500, through 3,000, through 4,000, 5,000, and you didn't sell. You had all those opportunities to take money off the table and reinvest it somewhere into something that might be undervalued. And then when it got to 5,000, it actually corrected and went back down to 1,500 bucks. It was a strong correction, or went back to 2,000. Not only did you lose the opportunity to realize a profit, but you're now back to where you started, where you could have, invested that money somewhere else and realized gains somewhere else. So I think precious metal investors as a group, we all have to remember that there is a time to let go. Mm-hmm. So something to keep in mind. Now, silver, on the other hand, you mentioned it earlier, I think that's the short-term play, especially right now. Silver was really, really lagging for a long time. People were getting literally depressed about holding all the silver at home or in storage, paying storage fees on it. They turned it into crypto. They were getting mad. People were getting mad. And now all of a sudden, silver's on a run. It's going up 2 to 3% a day. And that's what people expect silver to do during a crisis period. So I think right now, if you're like, I'm looking at 6 to 12 months horizon, I want to make a return in precious metals, silver is your play. Yeah? Mm. Now, for the platinum group metals, which are often forgotten, you have platinum, palladium, and rhodium. Some investors ask about those metals. I think your time horizon on those metals has to be more like 2 to 5 years, because those metals are really industrial. They're basically, their entire demand is really in the industrial sector. So when there's a global downturn and the economy is soft, those metals are going to depreciate in value. We saw palladium go from 3,000 an ounce to 2,000 an ounce during the last few months. I think it'll stay somewhere around there until the global economy picks up And then you're probably going to see palladium off to the races again, you know, another $3,000, $3,500 an ounce, and rhodium probably near $10,000 an ounce. So those are your flyers. Those are your long-term risk reward ones. Silver is your short-term play, and I think gold is just a cornerstone of any investment portfolio, really.
Yeah, when you look at those price targets, how do you account for inflation? Like if we had just overnight, if we went to the 1970s, then you've got to readjust. I would assume that you readjust those price targets. So how do you do that?
Well, that, you know, and that's the problem that we all face as investors. And I'm not an analyst. So, you know, I spend my days helping people buy gold and silver, move it around the world. I don't spend my days studying macroeconomics and macro trends. There's much smarter guys than me to do that. And I listen to those guys, you know, Raoul Powell, you know, Peter Schiff. Those are the guys I go to for my answers to those questions, to be honest. But I think that, you know, without necessarily saying what my price targets are because of inflation, because getting that data is really, really difficult. Right. I do know this. I've given it some thought. Inflation is good for gold, the price of gold to begin with, because it's good for all, like the price of all goods and services will basically, you know, increase as we enter an inflationary period. Commodities included in that basket of goods. So the price of gold, you know, will increase with inflation as well. The second thing that I think is that investors realize that when government is printing a lot of money, when they've got this, I think they called it highly accommodative monetary policy in place. When that kind of policy in place, investors are smart enough to realize, well, this is a risky situation. I think I should have more gold. They're buying more gold. That's also driving up the price of gold. And then you've kind of got the long-term icing on the cake is that when government policy has to forcibly change, they can no longer kick the can down the road. The mess that they will have created is also going to be good for gold. So I really look at it more, you know, picking a price like you, I don't really care where it's going, both professionally and personally, but I just focus my attention more on the policy that government has adopted right now. It's going to be positive for precious metals, which ultimately is my concern, both for my family and for my business.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the deficits, you look at M2 money supply, negative real interest rates, all of those lead you straight to precious metals for sure.
More than ever. Yeah. More than, you know, since at least the last financial crisis. So it's a pretty safe bet that the upside for precious metals will be positive if you haven't already invested. But I also tend to look at investments like that. What's the possible downside versus upside? And I think right now you're kind of in a position where the upside for precious metals is looking really good versus, you know, some other asset classes.
Thank you very much for a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed it. So for any of my viewers or listeners who want to find out more about you or what your company does, where can they go?
Sure. Yeah. So they can go to swpcayman.com, which is our website. It tells you about our products and services that are all, you know, built for precious metal investors. But if they want to learn more about the things that we spoke about today, we've got two full seasons of educational videos. It's free. It's on YouTube. They're each about 10 to 15 minutes. It's easy, kind of 101 stuff. And then there's some that are more advanced for people that have been doing this for a while. They should go check out our YouTube channel, just YouTube Strategic Wealth Preservation. And I'll pop up and you can watch that. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Mark, I appreciate your time. I can't wait to do it again.
All right, George. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.